Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're going to be time traveling, folks, back to 19th century Jerusalem.
Ooh, 19th century. That's going to be fascinating. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. And we're basing this journey on a lecture by Dr. Jeffrey Huden from Andrews University all about some amazing artifacts from their archaeology museum.
Sounds cool.
It is. So get this. We're talking about a 150-year-old model of Jerusalem.
Wow, that's old.
Oh, it gets better. It's from the 1880s, before modern development really took hold. And we're also going to be looking at a king of Israel immortalized in stone.
No way.
Way. Plus, we'll unravel a biblical mystery that scholars are still debating today. So buckle up, history buffs, because we're going deep.
Let's do it. I'm ready to dive in.
Okay, so first up, let's talk about this model of Jerusalem. It's incredible. It's like looking through a window to the past, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine. These kinds of models were super important back then, especially for folks who couldn't actually travel to Jerusalem.
Right. It was like going to the moon back then. Dangerous, expensive, and forget about photos. So this model gave people a glimpse of the city, its layout, and all the landmarks.
A precious snapshot of Jerusalem before everything changed.
Exactly. So let's imagine we're touring this model, taking it all in. We've got these valleys, like the Kidron Valley and the Tyrrhenian Valley, carved deep into the landscape.
You know, those valleys were way deeper back then. Centuries of debris have filled them in.
Wow, I never thought about that. And those valleys, they provided natural defenses for the city.
Yeah, they made it tough to attack. You can see why Jerusalem was so strategically important.
Totally. And there's the Mount of Olives rising up to the east with the Church of the Ascension right there on top. Queen Helena had that built way back in the 4th century.
Imagine the history that site has seen.
I know. And then there's this vast cemetery on the Mount of Olives. People have been burying their dead there since, like, the 2nd millennium BC.
That's mind-blowing. And look, over there's the village of Silwan, the biblical Shiloah.
Right, with those ancient tombs dating back to Old Testament times.
This model is just packed with history, isn't it?
It really is. You know, looking at it, you can almost imagine what it was like to wander those streets 150 years ago.
A completely different world. Before all the modern buildings and the hustle and bustle.
Yeah, it's like stepping back in time. And speaking of stepping back in time, let's focus on the southeastern hill.
Ah, the city of David, the heart of ancient Jerusalem.
Right. But you know what's interesting? Jerusalem wasn't established there for its strategic location or anything.
Nope. It was all about the water.
The Gihon Spring.
Exactly. The only water source for centuries. Everything revolved around that spring.
That's fascinating. So what have they dug up in the city of David?
Well, you wouldn't believe it. They found a house dating all the way back to the early Bronze Age, before 2000 BC.
Wow.
And then there are walls from the 8th and 7th centuries BC, the time of the Israelite monarchy.
So we're talking King David, King Solomon, all that.
Right. And they've even found remains of the wall Nehemiah built when the exiles returned from Persia.
It's like layers upon layers of history, all in one place.
That's Jerusalem for you. The past is always present, even beneath our feet.
Speaking of layers, let's move to the Western Hill. It's that one right there on the model.
You know, it's interesting. That hill is often mistakenly called Mount Zion today.
Really? So where's the real Mount Zion?
Drumroll, please.
Oh.
It's the Temple Mount. But the Western Hill has its own share of important sites.
Like what?
Well, there's the traditional site of the Upper Room and the House of Caiaphas, discovered in the 1970s.
And the Tomb of David.
That's right. Plus, they found towers and sections of walls dating back to the Old Testament period. It was a bustling area, that's for sure.
I bet. And what about those massive walls surrounding the old city? They really stand out on the model.
Those date back to 1517.
But they weren't the first walls, right?
Not at all. They were built on top of older walls, incorporating sections from different periods. It's like a patchwork of history.
So tell me about the citadel, the Tower of David. It looks pretty imposing.
It was. Strategically vital. One of the towers is actually a remnant of Herod the Great's fortifications.
So we're talking Roman times.
You got it. And this whole area was a weak spot in Jerusalem's defenses, so it needed serious fortification.
Makes sense. And where did the first wall run?
It started at the citadel, went around the Western Hill and Southeastern Hill, up to the Temple Mount, and then back to the citadel.
And that was built when?
In the 8th century BC. But it was destroyed and never fully rebuilt.
Wow. It's just amazing to see how all these pieces fit together.
We were just getting started.
Right. Let's talk about some of those other intriguing sites, like Herod's Palace.
Now part of the Armenian Quarter. And speaking of the Armenian Quarter, have you heard about the debate over the location of Ecce Homo?
Wait, the place where Pilate presented Jesus to the crowd?
That's the one.
Yeah.
The traditional site is near the Via Dolorosa. But there's another theory.
What's that?
That Jesus was presented from a platform outside Herod's palace.
Oh, interesting. So there's the Armenian quarter and, of course, the Christian, Muslim, and Jewish quarters.
Each with its own unique history and landmarks.
Like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, covering both the crucifixion and burial sites.
Right. And don't forget the Herva Synagogue in the Jewish quarter.
Oh, and what about the Mugravi quarter?
That was actually removed to allow access to the Western Wall. It was a controversial move, but it gave people a chance to connect with one of Judaism's holiest sites.
I can see why that would be important. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground already, but there's one site we can't ignore.
The Temple Mount.
The heart of it all. And it's got that distinctive trapezoidal shape.
And let's not forget that massive platform Herod the Great built.
He was a pretty ambitious builder, huh?
He expanded the platform over the Tyropian Valley, filled it in to create a larger space for worshipers.
Wow, that's a major engineering feat. And on that platform, we've got the Dome of the Rock, the third holiest site in Islam.
And right nearby is the Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the first mosques in Jerusalem.
Such a blend of history and faith in one place.
It's a reminder that Jerusalem has been a sacred city for millennia for multiple religions.
Speaking of sacred history, wasn't there some research that pinpointed the location of the Jewish temples?
You're talking about Lean Ripmeyer's work. His research is pretty conclusive. Both Solomon's Temple and the Second Temple were located right beneath the Dome of the Rock.
That's amazing. It's like having a physical link to those ancient temples.
Exactly. It's like peeling back the layers of time and seeing the remnants of that ancient world.
Okay, so we've explored this incredible model of 19th century Jerusalem, but our journey doesn't end there. We've got two more amazing artifacts to uncover.
And trust me, their stories are just as captivating.
So we've seen how that incredible model gave 19th century folks a taste of Jerusalem. But to really dig into its history, we need something more tangible.
Oh, absolutely. Something we can really sink our teeth into.
Exactly. And that's where the Black Obelisk comes in, right?
You got it. It's like holding a piece of the biblical world in your hands. This black limestone monument. It's 7 feet tall, covered in intricate carvings and inscriptions.
I've seen pictures. It's pretty impressive.
It is. And it was discovered back in 1846 in Nimrud.
That was the ancient Assyrian capital, right?
That's the one. And here's the kicker. It features a king of Israel.
Wait, really? Which one?
None other than Jehu, son of Omri.
Hold on, Jehu. The one who overthrew the Omri dynasty. The one we read about in the Bible.
The very same.
You mean there's actual physical evidence of him outside of the biblical texts?
That's the power of archaeology.
Yeah.
It connects us to those ancient narratives, makes them feel real.
So it's like holding a piece of the Bible in your hands.
Exactly. And on this obelisk, we see Jehu bowing before the Assyrian king, Shalmaneser III.
Offering tribute, I imagine.
You know it.
So
it's not just confirming Jehu existed, but it's also giving us a glimpse into the political landscape of the time.
Makes you wonder what was going through his head, right? Imagine you're this newly crowned king facing the might of the Assyrian Empire.
What do you do? Fight or submit?
Talk about a tough decision.
It seems Jehu chose a more strategic approach. He might have taken advantage of some weakness in Assyria to grab power.
Playing the game, huh?
But then when Shalmaneser III reasserted his control, well, Jehu opted for diplomacy and tribute.
Makes sense.
Better to bend than break, right?
Definitely. And speaking of Shalmaneser III, isn't there a thought that he could be the same Shalman mentioned in Hosea?
Whoa, you've been doing your homework. Yes, some scholars definitely make that connection.
That's pretty wild.
It adds a whole new layer to Jehu's actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he see collaborating with Assyria as a necessary evil?
Or was he just playing a dangerous game?
We can only speculate, but it sure is intriguing.
It makes you realize just how much we don't know about the past. And how each new discovery can completely change our understanding.
Archaeology is full of surprises.
It is. But before we get too lost in those political intrigues, there's another artifact with a story that's almost too crazy to believe. The Mesha Stela.
Ah, yes. The Mesha Stela. And I hear its discovery involves a near disaster.
Oh, yeah. This story is pretty wild.
It really is. Picture this. 1868. An Anglican missionary, Frederick Klein, finds this incredible stone monument in Moab.
That's modern-day Jordan, for those who don't know.
Right. Anyway, Klein finds this deal, and you can imagine how excited he must have been. But then, he he makes a crucial mistake.
Uh-oh. I've seen enough Indiana Jones to know that's usually when things go wrong.
You said it. He goes public with his discovery.
And word gets out.
To the wrong people, unfortunately. News reaches some local Bedouin tribes, and they get the idea that this steel contains gold.
Oh, no. I can see where this is going.
Driven by that idea, they end up shattering the steel into pieces.
Talk about a heartbreaking moment. It's like watching a piece of history crumble before your eyes.
It was a close call. Thankfully, it wasn't a total disaster.
Phew. But how did they manage to save it?
Enter Charles Clermont-Gounod, a French diplomat.
A diplomat to the rescue.
Yep. He swoops in just in time. And get this. He uses a paper squeeze that had been made before the steel was broken.
Talk about a stroke of luck.
It was. And with that squeeze, he's able to recover many of the pieces and reconstruct a huge chunk of the inscription.
Wow. That's some serious archaeological heroism.
It was a close one, for sure.
But now for the big question.
Yeah.
What does this rescued inscription actually tell us?
Well, first of all, it's written in Moabite, which is very similar to Hebrew.
So we can read it.
Oh, yeah. And it's an account straight from King Mesha of Moab. You might remember him from Two Kings.
Wait, so we're getting the other side of the story.
Exactly. It's his version of events, a boastful retelling of his rebellion against Israel.
It's incredible to get that kind of perspective. We rarely hear from the other side.
It really is. And not only does it confirm some biblical events, but it also fills in details and gives us a totally different viewpoint.
So what does Mesha say?
He describes his victories, the cities he captured. He even claims he had divine favor for his actions.
Makes those battles come alive, doesn't it?
It's not just a dry account in a history book anymore. It's a clash of kingdoms, of ambitions, of beliefs.
It really is. And there's one detail that's particularly interesting. Mesha mentions the House of David.
You got it. One of the earliest references to the Davidic dynasty outside the Bible.
That's a big deal, right? Especially for those who question the historical accuracy of the Bible.
Huge. It's like a piece of physical evidence to support those narratives.
So the Mesha steel is more than just a story of near destruction. It's a window into history.
It's a treasure trove. It gives us insights into the language, culture, politics of the time.
And you mentioned that it's still being studied. What more can we possibly learn from it?
That's the thing about archaeology. It never really ends.
We're always learning.
Exactly. New technologies, new research, new perspectives. It all leads to new insights, even from artifacts we think we know well.
So we've got this model of Jerusalem giving us a visual of the city.
A lost landscape.
And then the black obelisk and the Mesha stall connecting us to biblical figures and events.
It's amazing how these artifacts can bring the past to life.
It really is. It's amazing to think about all these artifacts, separated by centuries, but now brought together in this deep dive.
Yeah. It really shows you how archaeology can piece together the past.
It's like each artifact holds a clue, and when you combine them,
you start to see a more complete picture.
Exactly. You see those ancient kings making their moves, the battles, the alliances, the religious beliefs of entire cultures.
It's all there, hidden in these artifacts.
Just waiting to be discovered.
And for me, what's really amazing is that these aren't just objects in a museum. They're tangible connections to real people, to real events that shaped history.
Like King Jehu staring back at us from that black obelisk, a figure straight out of the Bible.
And then there's the Mesha steel, almost lost forever, but now giving us a voice from Israel's enemy.
A perspective we don't often get to hear.
It's a reminder that history isn't always straightforward. There are always multiple sides to every story.
Multiple interpretations.
And every new discovery can change how we understand the past.
Like the Mesha stele mentioning the House of David.
Exactly. That has huge implications for the debate about King David and his dynasty.
Really makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. It shows us that history is complex and we're always learning and reevaluating.
But beyond all the historical facts and details, these artifacts speak to something deeper.
What do you mean?
They tell us that we're part of something bigger, something that goes back thousands of years.
We're connected to those ancient people.
To their struggles, their triumphs.
It's like their stories become our stories.
Makes you wonder, though, what will future archaeologists find when they look back at our time?
Oh, that's a great question.
What will they make of our buildings and our technology?
What stories will they tell about us?
I guess we'll never know for sure.
But it does highlight how important it is to preserve our own history.
Even the everyday things.
Because someday, they could be the key to understanding our time.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into 19th century Jerusalem, I'm feeling a sense of awe.
It's inspiring, isn't it?
We've explored a lost landscape, encountered those biblical figures, and uncovered mysteries that still puzzle scholars today.
And the journey doesn't have to end here.
Right. Keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
Keep searching for those hidden connections to the past.
You never know what amazing discoveries are out there just waiting to be found.
Maybe someday you'll make a discovery that changes how we see history.
Until then.
Happy digging, everyone.
And thanks for joining us on this adventure through time.